Hello and welcome to the WellFest podcast with me, Marty Guilfoyle, the brand new health, fitness and wellness podcast brought to you by WellFest together with presenting partner KBC. Here we'll speak to industry experts all at the top of their game who will motivate us and inspire us to move well, eat well and live well. This podcast, supported by KBC, is just one of many free health and wellness resources available on wellfest.ie to help you on your wellness journey. With thanks to KBC, we'll be tapping into a wealth of fitness and wellness knowledge with our podcast guests to empower even more people of all ages to prioritise their health, fitness and well-being. Because KBC want you feeling well good for WellFest 2020. Now, let's dive into this week's episode. So Roz Purcell is a best-selling cookery writer, host of the Bite Back podcast, Nike ambassador, creator of the Hike Life community, and winner of Irish Tattler Woman of the Year Social Award 2019. We're still going, don't worry. A country girl from Tipperary, Roz first came to prominence in Ireland when she won Miss Universe, but it wasn't until she quit modelling and launched a hugely popular food blog, Natural Born Feeder, that her career really took off. Welcome, Roz.
Hey, I love that introduction. Ever I go in that voice, you've such a great radio voice.
Maybe I should be on the radio.
Yeah, maybe you should. Yeah, but you're kind of known as a TikTok man now.
Oh, stop! Yeah. No. Nobody download TikTok, please. We're actually doing this in front of a live audience right now. We're just going to put that out there. So if you guys want to make noise at any stage, you can. So that backs up the
Come on, everyone.
Yeah, there are 10,000 people in the room right now here with us. Shiraz, let's dive into it. You've been in the spotlight for about 10 years now.
I know, it's a decade. It's kind of scary when I think about it now that I started in this industry 10 years ago, almost over 10 years ago, because I'm 29 now and I started when I was 18.
And how has that been over the course of the last 10 years?
Definitely makes you grow up a lot faster. Mm-hmm. But I kind of feel like when I meet people and I tell them I'm 29, they expect me to be a little bit older because they're like, you've been around for so long. And, you know, I
have people...
Do you
get offended by that or...
I don't know, I've been around a very long time. And, you know, people who, I think it was even... Someone recently said it to me, they're like, I grew up with you on the TV, and I was like, you're the same age as me, you know. But no, I think it's, you know, I obviously got into it, you know, 18 actually isn't that young in comparison to a lot of people. But I'm glad I got into it at that age because I think it gave me a nice sense of direction when I didn't have any.
18 from the point of view getting into modeling isn't very young, isn't it?
No, not at all. Like, especially when I was living over in New York, you know, you'd have girls who were 15 and 16, and I, even at 18, felt old.
And did you get into it by accident, or was it something you always wanted to do?
I got into it by accident, but I did grow up watching America's Next Top Model.
That's what I was going to ask.
Yes, yes. I was prepared for all the, you know, and even in New York, they chopped my hair into a bob and dyed it red. And I was fully prepared to be like, no. And I was like, don't be that girl, Roz. I love it, you know. So, yeah, I grew up watching it, but I didn't think I would ever become a model.
But you're glad you did.
I am. Yeah. And you know what? Obviously, I look back and, you know, there was definitely times I really enjoyed it. And I think it gives you a huge amount of life lessons, but also opportunity to live in different countries and meet so many people. Otherwise, you just would never, ever get to do. But then again, I was doing it from 18 to about 23. And I always look back and I remember my biggest worry was missing out on my friends and the college experience that I could have had, which sounds kind of silly because I was obviously living all over the world and my friends were jealous of that. And I was like, I wish I could go on a night out with my friends.
But it makes sense though. It does make sense because you think about it, if you're a model at that high a level, if I compare that to what I was doing during my college years where I wasn't watching what I was eating and I didn't have somebody making sure I was eating a certain way and stuff. And I mean, during my college years, like I didn't track anything, like anything that was edible. I just went with it. Like, so it is a completely different experience altogether.
Yeah. And you know what? I definitely think it sped up that, you know, I talk about it quite freely now, but it definitely sped up the whole self-hatred and the way I looked at my body. But saying that, I do cherish, I went through all of secondary school, high school to a lot of people, completely loving myself, you know, and being really confident. So I am very lucky that it took me until I was about 19 to have the effects of diet culture and everything like that. But yeah, it definitely, you know, obviously I was getting into an industry that was purely based on aesthetics. So I knew what I was going in for, but I thought I was stronger mm-hmm. and able to take it. But slowly, I think, you know, comments, they do start chipping away at you.
One thing that you do online, which is fantastic, is you are really open about your failures, which is great because so many, you know, people could aspire to do what you've done, not only when you're 18, but when you're 21, 25, and now that you're 29. Like, why do you think it's so important to be open about your failures with your audience?
Because I guess there's times when I think, you know, even you saying that now, you've been in the industry 10 years, and I think, I haven't really done much. Or I haven't really gotten to where I want to get to yet. Yeah. And I've been trying this for 10 years. Should I just move on? Should I try something new? I feel like loads of things haven't worked out. And I feel like that because it feels like everyone else around me who I'm looking at through social media is succeeding and everything seems to work out for them. So I think it was a few weeks ago, a month ago, I posted all my failures online. It was actually such a sense of relief. Finally, I just get off my shoulders because there was parts of my life I just kind of avoided talking about because it wasn't successful. Mm-hmm. And it was really nice to share that. And I think sharing it made other people talk about their failures and how they led to successes. And it reinforced this idea that I can't be afraid to fail, because I do think one big thing with me over my 10 years, I've become very fearful of failing because everyone will know.
Yes.
And that's something you kind of need to just get on with and understand that failing is the only thing that's going to lead you to success. And success, there's no age limit on it. So you could be in industry 10 years or 20 years.
I think we do tend to like look at a lot of people online, don't we, who are doing what we want to do. And the first thing we nearly do is we Google their age.
And you're like, they're 22.
Yeah, that's it.
What the hell?
Yeah.
And, you know, everyone's time is a different time. And you can't judge your life and journey off someone else's, even if they are younger than you, you know. And looking through the eyes of social media, you know, we're not getting a full picture mm-hmm. either. So it's definitely something I've definitely tried to step back from and stop comparing myself and just sharing. And every time I put up a post that is something around failures or my life, there should be a sense of vulnerability about it. And I do get that. Mm-hmm. And I think that needs to be shown more on social media because that's relatable. And that's what I want to see people posting about. Because not that it's just going to make me feel better about my life, but it's going to showcase normal things.
Make you feel normal, yeah. We look back over the last 10 years now. It might be a difficult question to answer, but can you tell us one thing that you've learned in the last 10 years that really sticks out?
Not to regret anything.
Okay.
I definitely used to be someone who would always be looking back and think, I wish I did that differently. I wish I did that differently. And it wasn't until I met someone about 2 years ago, and she's a very wise woman. And I kind of said something like, oh, I wish I didn't do that. And she said, never regret anything in your life. Your past is your past. You need to break up with your past. Mm-hmm. So I think I wish I would have done that earlier, because you have this huge weight lifted off your shoulders. So it's like every morning you wake up, you're like, doesn't matter what I did yesterday. Doesn't matter if I didn't think I did it right, or I wish I did it better. I have a better chance today.
Yeah, you can't rewrite it. And what do you think to date has been your biggest success?
See, this is I think I look at everything, and I'm a bit of a perfectionist, and I always look at everything and go, and I know I'm talking, I just talked about this, but I still feel like I want to have a big one to come. Do you
okay.
get me?
Yeah.
But I guess my biggest success, and looking back, the thing I'm like that makes my heart warm, I guess, is probably my first cookbook, because I never thought that I would be an author. Mm-hmm. And I know you might be like, author, it's a cookbook, but it's the same thing.
No,
you still have to write, right? Okay?
Has someone said that to you before?
No.
You probably got someone tweet you, say, oh, you're not an author, it's a cookbook, yeah.
I'm like, the best books are picture books. Come on, people. You know? So,
you're
and as well,
wrong,
like,
yeah.
Cookbooks are amazing because they're the type of books you keep coming back to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I think that was pretty spectacular from myself and my family, because they were like,
oh my God, she wrote a book.
She did something. Oh my God. And, you know, I did a pop-up cafe from that. And it was really special having that experience of opening a cafe where my family were actually my workers, because I had no money to pay anyone. And it was like Fawlty Towers. And then we realized my dad was actually slightly deaf.
I was going to make a bad joke when I'm listening to this podcast. But I won't do that. And now you say, you know, that's one of your biggest successes is being an author and writing a book. And you're on your third one now. No Fuss Vegan. Like, what has led you to be so creative in the kitchen? Because we were chatting about this before we started recording about how our diets are very similar. Mm-hmm. But like our actions aren't really, like, because you're so good in the kitchen, whereas I'm so bad. Like, where did that all begin?
I've always been creative in the kitchen. So when I used to get home from school, you know, the first thing I would say is, can I go bake a cake? And my parents would be
in
like,
school?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. And I wouldn't allow would go near like, any of that.
Oh, okay. You can go bake a cake. You know.
And they let
that's
you.
Fine. Yeah. So like for dinner, I would just be making these different souffles and things like that. So I've always kind of found baking as a way for me that I could have my own time. And I think I'm quite like creative. Like I like working with my hands. It kind of makes me be present. I think that's the main thing. I used to always just look at baking as a hobby, and it wasn't until, you know, I was about 25, I realized I love baking so much because it's the only thing that makes me present. Nothing else does that for me. I think, you know, a lot of people can meditate and do yoga. I can't. My head just wanders and races. Whereas baking is actually the only thing that makes me stop and be present. And I think that's why I have such a really good relationship with it. And it's something I always have leaned towards. And obviously, you know, going through disordered eating in the modeling industry, it's something I stopped for a long time. And by going through that, I think it made me realize that it was my real passion. And from that grew Natural Born Feeder.
I think these days, everybody is just so busy. And like everyone is just flat out. Everyone is working, we're training.
But so, yet we have time to look at our phones.
Exactly, yeah. You know? But then, okay, if we want, let's incorporate that time on our phones into this question, okay? So someone like me, we just said, we spoke about how I'm terrible in the kitchen. I just don't put enough time into it. For someone like me who'd be, in inverted commas, short on time based on the comment we just made about our phones, what would be your best recipe for someone who is, in inverted commas again, short on time?
Chickpea scramble, like it is, takes like 3-4
minutes
to make.
Okay, go on, talk us through. Talk us through a chickpea
scramble.
So
everyone, tin of chickpeas, you know, they're going to be in your press. They're not going to go off. They're perfect. Make sure you rinse them or else you're going to fart, okay?
What? Really?
Yeah.
I thought that was just a thing anyway.
Well, no, it doesn't help. I think the brine definitely doesn't help. It kind of makes you gassy. Yeah. So rinse them really, really well. But you can save the brine and make like, you know, aquafaba and make meringues and stuff, but they're very difficult, I'm not going to lie. So rinse your chickpeas, put them into a pot, mash them up with some spices like paprika, a little bit of like cumin, turmeric, and then put in a little bit of nutritional yeast. Nutritional yeast is amazing, especially if you're trying to go more plant-based and you want something that's going to flavor your food, give it a bit of a cheesy flavor. Mash it all together, heat it up, pop it on some toast, put it into a wrap with some spinach and tomatoes. It's so easy.
That to me sounds like a lot of time.
No, honestly, it takes no time whatsoever. But what I would say to someone who I think said, you know, who does say, I don't have enough time to meal prep, I don't have enough time to go to the gym, then you need to stop and make a diary of your day, because you definitely do have time.
Yeah.
And you definitely need to start prioritizing you. So you need to start prioritizing the things that make you feel good. Mm-hmm. And usually eating well and training, not training, moving, kind of makes people feel good.
So we went there with a short recipe. What's the longest that you've ever spent making anything at all? Like, that you've been in the kitchen for how long?
So this one time.
And were you proud of it at the end?
I was, but no one remade the recipe, and I don't blame them. It was very long. I was making vegan wagon wheels. So this was like years ago when I first started blogging. I made a vegan marshmallow. And then I made like an easy vegan jam. Then I made a biscuit base. And then I put them all together and wrapped them up. And it took so long, each different layer, to perfect it and actually like wait for them to set. By the end of it, I didn't want to eat them. I was like, they're so precious.
Oh, okay.
They're so precious. And no one remade the recipe. And I don't blame them.
How do you know nobody remade it?
Because people would always tag me in their recreations.
And you didn't get tagged in this one?
No. No. No, no, no.
Well, is it possible that they might have made them and didn't like the taste of them? Or is
Oh, no. I think people kind of, people always Instagram their food.
Yeah, that's actually you know, very true. They do. We do. Yeah. Speaking of Instagram, and I know you were wanted to talk about this in a different context when we kind of spoke about it before we start recording. You do talk a lot about body positivity, but you want to refer to it as something else. Isn't that
well,
right?
Yeah. So body positivity was a movement, a social movement that came in the 60s. And, you know, I suppose when I talk about self-image, I talk more about body confidence, and that's like being confident in the body that you have. So they are two very different kind of, one's a movement and I suppose they're both kind of movements, I guess, but they're very, very different. And I suppose when I talk about it, I talk a lot about it from my own personal experience and journey with it. And I suppose in diet culture and I suppose regaining confidence in myself. And I suppose it's, there's so many words that are kind of thrown around about it now, you know, with body neutrality and all that. I think it's just like not stopping doing things because you hate yourself or you think you should look a certain way in order to be successful. You think you should look a certain way for someone to love you. It's just kind of accepting yourself as you are and not feeling like you need to change physically to be better. And challenging, I think, how society kind of looks at the female body and male body as well. And even I think different parts of our body, like, you know, stretch marks, all those things, they should just be normal. And I think more people need to just start not covering them up and not editing them out of photos, whether that's on traditional media or social media, because you have young people growing up who don't have a real concept of anything.
Mm-hmm. And at what point over the last, say, 10 years did you kind of start to realize this?
Well, I guess I got to a stage where I realized I was portraying the expectation that people had of me through my own social media. Mm-hmm. And I kind of forgot that my own social media was my own voice and I could choose my own photos. I didn't have to live up to anyone's standards. And all throughout my life, especially when I was modeling, I would see these images of myself and I'd be like, they are not my legs. Like, that photographer like has completely cut off half my legs.
It
like,
would actually go that far.
I have lovely, strong legs. And, like, I have twigs in this photo. And I'd be like, I'd be thinking, people are going to meet me and be like, she does not look like her photos. Okay. And it would give me a huge amount of insecurity. And I think one of the last jobs I did, I actually was shooting for this huge hair campaign. And they took a shot and I looked banging. Like, I was like, this shot's great. I mean, I look fantastic.
And then, and then you saw it after it was edited.
Well, the photographer right in front of me turned a large screen around and he edited it right in front of me. And I'd never actually seen a photographer edit a photo in front of me. He sucked in my waist. Like, he made it like half the size. He like evened my chin. Like, I was, I didn't even think I ever had like a little tiny bit of a double chin or anything. He like structured my jawline and like made my arm look much smaller. He's like, nah, that's perfect.
No way.
And I just remember being like, oh my God. Like, I actually went home feeling like I need to change so much right now in order to be accepted. And that was kind of the last thing, the last straw. That's when I decided I wasn't going to model anymore.
Mm-hmm. And for someone who's listening right now who say sees you online and you're so open about it, and they are struggling to kind of accept that their own body that they're in, you know, is there any advice you can give to that person who's listening? Well, I do think it's tough, like, you know, with Instagram, like, it is hard. Like, I go on my discovery page and I see a guy and I'm like, wouldn't mind looking like that. And then you tell me, then you tell me these stories about like how someone gave you new legs. Yeah. I'm like, am I looking at even a real person right now?
And like, even like I would see photos of myself and they'd have removed the like little mole I have on my face. And I'd forget I'd have a mole on my face.
I didn't even notice that until you pointed it out.
And like, I'd be looking in the mirror, I'm like, oh yeah, shit, I have that. I'm so used to looking at myself, my edited self, I forget what I even look like, you know. So I just kind of got to stage with social media. I was going to go off it because I found like it was very toxic, and I would, like yourself, find myself on the Explorer page. I'd find myself on some random stranger's page and I would feel so shit about my own body, about my life, about my holidays. And I was going to go off social media. I was like, what is this? I know obviously for us, it's kind of part of our job, but really, is a job worth feeling shit about? Yeah. No. And then I kind of was giving myself a bit of time and I was away on a holiday. And I think sometimes when you're away from everything, you have a bit more clarity. And I just thought, maybe if people started using social media in a better way, it would be a more positive place. Mm-hmm. So I decided to kind of, rather than leaving stay in the room and say something good and be the person that I needed to follow in my early 20s. And that was just someone who was just honest mm-hmm. and who didn't edit their photos and who could put up an unflattering photo and be okay with it and showcase the 99.9% of photos that were actually taken that day, you know. And I guess for me, for anyone out there who's listening, who is finding it tough at the moment, and I'd be lying if I said I was 100% confident in myself the whole time. I am not. There's times I still find myself going on social media and that damn Explore page.
It's funny as well how when you go on the Explore page, it literally says it. It's like Instagram has put these together because we think you'll like them.
Yeah. Well, I do like them. I like them a lot, but I want to be that person.
Yeah, I want to be that person. Yeah. That's how much
so
I like them.
So I kind of, and I do come off feeling crap. And it's almost like, why do I feel crap? Oh yeah, I went on and I saw this amazing person's life and body and now I feel mine's inadequate. And you have to remind yourself that that is, Instagram in particular is where people only post their good photos. It's a moment of someone's day that of a stranger you know nothing about. Mm-hmm. Like, and I can tell you from being on the other side where people have probably looked at my photos at some stage and said, oh, why, I wish I looked like her. And I was going through hell when a lot of my photos were being put up when I was in modeling photos or whatever that is. And a lot of times when I put up photos on holidays, people are like, oh my God, it looked amazing. And I'm like, oh, like, I was fighting my boyfriend all day. I forced him to take that photo, you know. So you don't really know what's going on with anyone's day, you know.
He does take some really good pictures.
Yeah, he does. He does.
Shout out to the boyfriend for sure. Like, absolutely. So I'm sure you get good pics about him back, though, don't you?
Yeah, but he's really private, so he's not on socials.
He just has like a collection of photos that will never be seen by anybody.
Yeah. You come to our house, it's like a shrine. But so back to anyone out there who's feeling, you know, very insecure in their own body and feeling down about themselves, I think the first thing is just realizing that you do, and that's perfectly normal thing. And sometimes you maybe need to go talk to someone about it, which was something I did. I went and I got professional help, which I think was one of the best things I ever did for myself, best investment to who I am now. And other times you just need to haul your Instagram. You need to go through and you need to look at your Instagram like your favorite magazine, and you put it together of things you want to see. Mm-hmm. Content that's going to inform you, content that's going to open your mind, content that's going to make you happy. And maybe that's not following Victoria's Secret models, and that's okay.
Yeah, because I do love it. Like, I'm addicted to
Victoria's Secret models.
Cat's out of the bag. You got it. They're like, podcast cut this now. No, because I do love it. And I think you're so right that you can design it, your timeline, in a way that you enjoy it more, for sure. And I think that sometimes you do kind of go down that hole where you just follow someone because everyone else is, you know. Yeah. And sometimes that could probably be the worst thing that you do. Mm-hmm. Off the topic of social media for a while, you love the gym.
I do.
Yeah, I've trained with you before and I didn't love the gym afterwards.
I've always been into training.
But at the time that we trained, you were training twice a day.
Yeah.
So how do you, like, then you look at yourself online, you're cooking, you've got three books, like, you were a model. It's like, how do you fit it all in and still manage to sleep and see your boyfriend?
Yeah, well, okay, first of all, my boyfriend and I live together, which makes it easy, kind of, like, it's much easier to do all these different things when you live with someone. Uh-huh. But, yeah, like, I guess when we train together, I've definitely changed my training habits. And I think my history with disordered eating, a huge part of that was overtraining. I was very dependent on using training as a way of punishing myself for eating. It was almost like a conversion.
Oh, so if you ate, you'd feel the need to train afterwards. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, like, there was times when I was going through really bad disordered eating, I was not eating and also training multiple times a day. And so, you know, people, like I said, could have seen photos of me then and go, oh my God, she looks amazing. But they didn't understand what I was putting my body through to be like that. And even then, people were editing my photos. Like, come on.
It's like, I'm training twice a day. Yeah. I'm eating so well.
That's
and you're still giving me someone
else's
legs.
I am literally, like, you know, killing myself. And I'm still not good enough. So anyway, one of the best things I actually did, because I obviously went and got helped for disordered eating. I went to counselling and I went to speak to dietitians, and I was really, really in the road to recovery. And like, my last part of that was looking at my training mm-hmm. and getting used to not training as much. And it's a very hard thing to do because I always grew up training quite a lot as well. It was kind of in my nature to like never be sitting down yeah. and always doing things. And one of the best things I actually did for that was go and study to be a PT. Mm-hmm. And that taught me so much about recovery and actually training smart. So I don't train that excessively anymore. But
you were enjoying it to an extent.
Yeah,
as
I do.
Well,
and yeah. that's the thing. That's why it was so hard to stop.
Because you enjoyed
it. I really
yeah.
enjoy the gym. Like, I love the gym for a few different reasons. Like, I have a community when I get there. So whether I'm going to a boxing class or I'm, you know, going to yoga, like there's people I know around me and it's mm-hmm. almost like a catch up. But then again, I love challenging myself. My mentality towards the gym has definitely changed. I go to the gym now because I love my body. And I go to the gym because I'm like, I want to get so strong. Yeah. Like, I want to be, when I'm 50 or 60, like all the work I've done now has led me to have a really
you
good, strong body.
You want to be in that gym body. Squatting
100
kilos
yeah,
at 60.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, so I go to the gym and I train now because I love my body and I want it to be fit, healthy and strong and fast.
We were talking before actually we started recording about how you love an active rest day. So can you talk a little bit more about that? Because to me, when I'm resting, I just don't want to move at all. But then because you said you're so active. So like, what would an active rest day be?
Yeah, no, there's different times. Because say on Saturday, I had to run a 20K because I'm doing a half marathon in 2 weeks. So on Sunday, I did not move from the couch. But that was because I was like, I didn't realize the route I'd picked on the Saturday was all uphill in the wind. So I was like, so like Sunday I did absolutely nothing. So that was a rest day where I did nothing. But there's times when I'm just in my normal gym routine doing my strength program and maybe not running long distance. And my active rest day would just be going for a walk on the pier and, you know, walking everywhere and just like making sure I kind of get in 10,000 steps and not just totally flaking out on mm-hmm. the couch. But the weather's been pretty shit now.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
you know.
Even
like,
from a mood point of view, it really yeah, does get to you.
I have missed two of my runs so far this week already. Because, you know what? I would before I would have killed myself and now I'm just like, you know what? You're doing really good. Just take it, chill out. You know what I mean? You don't have to do everything the whole time. You're not going to, and nothing's going to be 100% and that's cool.
So you mentioned there you were training for a marathon. In
half
a couple
marathon.
Of,
half big
marathon,
difference.
Apologies.
Oh my God.
No, it's still good though. You yeah. give yourself that pat on the back again. Like.
Oh, yeah. No, like 22K, I've done half marathons a lot before. Mm-hmm. And it's a distance I like to run. I still find it enjoyable. I don't really seem to get any knee injuries. And it doesn't take away from my strength training, which okay. is something I like. Because anytime I've gone over that distance, well, my left knee always starts to like start talking to me. But also, my strength training, like I have to step it back quite uh-huh. a lot and it's the part of the gym that I really, really enjoy. So yeah, doing a half marathon, it's actually St. Patrick's Day in New York. I'm
wow.
doing it. Yeah.
And talk to us a bit about the training for a half marathon. There's like a lot of people out there who would love to even start running.
Yeah, so I'm actually doing another half in 3 months' time. And I'm going to put up my training program so people can train alongside with me.
Great.
So there'll be beginner, intermediate and advanced. So, you know, if you've never ran before, there'll be a training program for you. And I think, you know, as someone like myself or yourself who has a platform, if you're doing something, one of the best things about it is sharing your experiences and sharing mm-hmm. your love for something. But every time I go for a long run, I always get amazed. I'm like, oh my God, you can actually train your body to do anything.
See, I look at it. I did an Ironman years ago to raise money for charity. You know, we didn't get recognized for it in the end because we missed a checkpoint.
Okay.
Based on what they thought was a head concussion. Mm-hmm. I was actually really upset after because I just wanted the medal and we'd raised so much money. And I genuinely mean this. That was 5 years ago and I have not gone near something like that since.
Yeah.
It's like it scarred me or something. Yeah. Like,
I have to say, so I did a Ironman 70.3.
Yeah.
About 6 years ago now and I did not do any long distance training until this 5 years time because I was so scarred from it.
Yeah.
And it was just because you put so much emphasis into one thing and you're out in your own training. It was all, and I did enjoy the process, but when I came out the other side, I was like, no, max 45 minutes a day in the gym. Like I was scarred for a while. So I think there's kind of, you need to find balance. And mm-hmm. I definitely didn't have balance with it. And you were probably the same.
Yeah. And how have you kind of like found that balance? You know, because for someone say who loves their strength training, I'd say it's difficult to kind of go, right, I'm going to up my cardio. And I think you get a lot of people kind of get into this mindset where they kind of go, well, I love my strength training so much, I don't want to, again, inverted commas, lose my gains doing so much cardio. And you now have a balance of the two.
Yeah, so there was a while there last year where I was like, oh my God, I finally have a bum. Oh. And I was like, oh, I'm getting so strong in the gym, but I can't run 5K anymore. I can't run 10K.
I've been there, yeah.
I want, like I said, like I love my body. I want to be able to be fit as well. And like, I love being able to go for a run and be like, oh, I still got it.
You're actually fit. It's not just that you look fit.
No. And like, I've always been the type of person who likes to vary my training, and I want to be the all rounder. When it comes to fitness, I don't really care for being like the best at one thing. I want to be someone like, if you brought me into the wilderness, I would still be able to like do all these different challenges. You know, I want to be able to be good at everything. And I want to be functional as well. Like, I don't want to be someone who can lift loads of weight, but I can't touch my toes, you know.
I definitely can't touch my toes. Yeah. I feel terrible right now.
But so it's kind of, you know, looking at what you want as well. Like, you might just be the person who just wants to be strong in the gym. Yeah. That's totally cool.
That's cool. You've done so much. Like, you really, really have. Like, what's next? Like, in everything. I mean, like, you're doing half marathons. Like, would you train for the full marathon in October?
Yeah, no, is there a fourth
book coming? Like, are you gonna model again? Like, it's like
oh God. Definitely won't be modeling again. But yeah, I hate that question. I'm gonna be honest, when people say what's next, I've always been someone in life who goes with the flow. People always think I have this like master plan.
What would you like to be next? As in, you don't even have to have a plan. Like, surely there's something.
I would love, here we go. Say that to the universe. I would love a cooking show. I would love a cooking show.
Oh.
That's what I would love. Yeah. Cooking is definitely my biggest passion. Like, obviously, I've created a hike life community where, you know, I get to share my passion because I grew up just on the foot of a mountain. So I've always been into hiking. And, you know, I love training. But food is definitely the thing where if someone comes up to me and they say, I bought your book or I created this recipe, I get so happy because it's like you're giving someone a present. Because I think food is such a, I was just going to say silly, but a gift. You know what I mean?
You kind of need it. Like,
yeah, you need it. But I enjoy nothing more than making something and seeing people's reactions when they eat it.
And would this be kind of like a TV program that you'd like to do? Or?
I would love to do a TV show. Yeah. I definitely would aim high and go like Food Network.
Everyone
TV
here
show.
Now gets a cut out of this if she gets
a TV show. Yeah. Okay, we're going to put the Universe Food Network TV show. Yeah.
Great. Cool. Yeah.
That would be my ultimate dream.
And if there's peanut butter involved, I get to be the
first guest.
Peanut
butter involved, yes.
There's a lot of listeners right now who could probably do it, like they follow you for inspiration to feel better about themselves. Like, what would your three main takeaways be for our listeners right now? It's a tough question, I know, but
yeah,
like,
that is tough.
You're like, why are you asking me this?
No, what I would say is, number one, spend as much time and effort in your offline life as you do in your online life. That would be number one, because I think we spend so much time on our phones, and I'm even have to remind myself, like when I go to bed, I think when we all get into our bed, like we could be with our boyfriends or whatever, or girlfriends, we're on our phones and it's like night, like we don't talk to each other anymore.
Yeah.
So I would say, like, put as much effort into your offline
life. I'm afraid, I still haven't done it, and like I'm afraid to look at my screen time.
Yeah.
Genuinely afraid, like I won't do it.
I know, but you know what, you should, and then you should try kind of take a step back from it, because we put so much of our life into social media to make us look like we're living a life, and we're not really living a life actually.
Well, that's hit home, that one. Yeah. even the audience here with us were kind of like, oh wow.
Yeah, like,
did you just
you
come
know
out
what?
With that right there? Is like, that something that you mean?
The thing about it is, like, we're gonna get to like hopefully our 90s and we're not going to go, oh, I wish I spent more time on my phone. We're going to all think, I wish I spent less time on my phone.
Yeah.
And that's really, really, like, that's something I have gotten pretty good at. And I think, you know, in retrospect, a lot of people be like, oh, she doesn't really answer her DMs that much anymore. And like, she's not, I'm sorry, like, I have a life to live.
Yeah.
Like, I think social media is really good at connecting people. It's really great for creating communities, and for me it's fantastic to be able to like share my passions like hiking and food, and you know, now and again connect with an audience that, you know, I can share some advice with. But at the same time, my life is not on my phone. It's with my boyfriend, it's, you know, with my dogs, my friends, it's in my job getting to meet people. So it's having that boundary and understanding it.
So first takeaway is when we all get to 90, we want to look back and say, I spent less time on my phone than I should have. Okay, what would your second one be?
So my next one would be, and this is all like advice that I have learned, don't let it intertwine like what your parents or what your friends or what people expect of you. Don't get that kind of fogged with what you want to do. And this is something that's definitely happened for me. I think a lot of people throughout my life expect me to go in a certain way and expect me to want certain things. And sometimes I find myself on a path of what others expect from me rather than what I actually want for myself. So it's really good to step out of what you're doing now and again, step away from your friends, your family, your colleagues, and reevaluate and go, am I on the right path to do what I want? Or am I just on a hamster wheel going around and round and round? So I think it's what I would say to everyone out there. And I think, you know, for anyone's clarity, you need to sit down and write your list of goals and your list of priorities of what you want to do in the next year, next 5 years. And I know I said there, I don't like when people ask me what's next.
As opposed to what someone else expects of you. And
because I think we always start like, okay, my parents expect me now and I'm in this job to keep going up and up and up in this job. But I'm just doing it because someone else expects me to do it. I'm not doing it because it gives me fulfillment. So it's every now and again, stepping out and making sure that you're doing it for yourself and not for someone else.
I don't know if this is going to be a compliment or not. You can take it whatever way you want, but you're the third person to say that in the last 2 weeks. I had a chat with Jerry Hussey. He said that
amazing.
As well.
Yeah.
And the other person was Taylor Swift. Now, not her. She didn't say it to me. But she said it in her documentary, Miss Americana, about how over her 20s, it's literally exactly what you just said. So I don't know if that's like company you're happy to be part of. But you're literally the third person to say that about how she, in her early 20s to mid 20s, just did what people kind of wanted her to do. And it's only now that she's 29, 30, she's kind of realized, oh God, I need to start doing what I want to do.
Yeah. And you know what? At 25, I really thought that I was like, I know myself now. I've got everything in check. But it was only when I was 29, I realized I've been on a path, on a hamster wheel for what everyone else wanted me to do rather than I've never actually openly said what I wanted to do. And I've been working towards someone else's goals for the past 4 years. What the hell?
Mm-hmm.
My last thing would be to say to people, biggest takeaway would be, be your biggest fan. I know that might sound really strange, but I think like when my sister or, you know, if you came to me and you said, I'm going to do something, I'd be like, oh my God, that's amazing. And I hype people up and I'm like, always get behind people. Like I love hearing good news for other people and supporting them. And like, you can 100% do it. Like there's no chance anyone else getting that job. Like it's yours. But when it comes to myself, I'm like, oh no, I'm probably not going to be the one to get it. Like you get this imposter syndrome and you kind of look for all the reasons why you're probably not going to succeed. And I think it's really important to remember that you have to be your biggest fan because you're the only one who is going to get to live your life. So it's really important that when you have a moment and you feel shit about yourself or when you have a moment and you're going for something and you're like, I'm only doing this, but I'm not actually going to get it, that you actually stop and go, you know what? You're actually going to get this. You're going to be unbelievable. I know that's a bit like, I think in Irish culture, it's a bit conceived as quite cocky.
No, but when you hang out with you and you kind of like, I wouldn't even call it self-praise because I think that that's like, it sounds bad. It makes you be a bad person. But even like earlier on when you were talking about the picture that was taken of you that was modified after, you were like, I was banging in that picture.
Yeah.
And they went and changed it. Like it's good. Like, and it's not coming across as like cocky or arrogant at all. Like, you know, so I totally
But I think it's like, it's even just in your own head, like be your own biggest fan in your inner monologue. Like, we're constantly being our biggest troll sometimes. And it's just a reminder to be your biggest support.
Mm-hmm. Loved every one of them. Before we talk about Wellfest, we do need to convince KBC to get that sorted for Wellfest next year, if we can. You, Jerry Hussey, and Taylor Swift.
Oh my God. Yes, yes, yes. And like Jerry Hussey.
I can DJ at the halftime show.
Jerry Hussey and I were actually neighbors. So we see each other the whole time.
What? Are you really?
So I've known Jerry years. Jerry took me on like.
So like if you're ever kind of like feeling low, you can just stick out your head out the window and go, Jerry, make me feel better.
I call into his house sometimes and 3 hours later I come out and I'm like, I just got 3 hours free counseling. But Jerry's actually one of the people who made me go get help.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, okay. I was around him quite a lot at the time, and he didn't notice himself, but I was going to a lot of talks with him, and we were hired for a lot of jobs where I was eating the food, and he was kind of talking, and unwillingly to himself, he actually was the one who made me realise I need to go get help. Yeah,
amazing. I love that. You're going to be at Wellfest in association with KBC.
I am.
What are you going to be doing?
I am going to be on stage doing loads of cooking
demos.
There
was a couple of woos there. We got the crowd.
Yeah.
There are people here, we swear.
I love Wellfest. I remember going to the very first year of Wellfest, and it has grown so much. And I remember the first year I went as a guest, and the second year I went and I was doing a cooking demo, and I was so excited. I was like, oh my God. And obviously now it's amazing because I've been back year and year again, and it's just grown and grown. And I'm going to be doing a cooking demo. I have delicious recipes. I have like a... I have a jackfruit ragu, so good, and then I have these surprise cookies.
So
because they're all coated kind of in chocolate, so you don't know what's inside, so when you take a bite there's a surprise inside,
which must take really long to make. Really?
No, it actually doesn't. No.
No? No,
really doesn't, no.
Oh, wow. Okay, you should have said, yeah, made out. Like, more work for him, yeah.
Come to the demo, actually.
Absolutely. It, yeah. Ra, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. I can see why you've got such a huge community online. You honestly inspire so many people. If anyone's listening right now and they don't follow you, they don't know anything about you, where can they find you?
Mostly on Instagram at Rosanna Purcell, but you can also go onto my website. I post regularly. Maybe Instagram's not your thing. Maybe we're taking time out from it.
Yeah.
But
no,
you can also come along.
Yeah.
You can also come along to any of my Hike Life events and get to know me.
And the burning question is, are you getting on TikTok?
I am going to get on TikTok, but I feel like it's just going to be Wilco's page.
Oh, yeah. What are your cooking demos?
Oh, yeah, but you know, it's all the kids, so.
Yeah, they eat cookies.
Yeah. True, yeah.
Roz, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks
here for the
me.
Podcast. It's been amazing. And we're going to open up now to a couple of questions. Oh, yeah. So, any questions?
Yeah, I think you're a huge inspiration and role model to a lot of people. I'm curious, who is your inspiration?
Who is your role model?
I think it would probably be Jerry Hussey, because I know him personally, mm-hmm. and he's, you know, had a very big influential role in my life to date in going getting help. And he's someone I always go to for advice. And you know, funny enough, he comes to me for advice sometimes. And I'm
what?
Like, no,
that's no offense. I just can't imagine. Sorry, that sounded really bad.
No,
I just can't imagine. He, to me, he's like the book of knowledge. It's like,
yeah. No, so I go
sorry,
to,
that
I
sounded
go to,
so bad.
I go to him for all my woes and like, you know, for any kind of advice, but he kind of comes to me for social media advice. Yeah, so and social media advice and work advice and stuff, so uh-huh. He would definitely be a huge inspiration. And I always like to pick someone who I know, because I think when you've met someone and you see that they live the life that they talk about,
gotcha,
that's really important.
And are we allowed to mention we're going to have him on the podcast? Yes, we can. I just got to go ahead and then we're going to have him on the podcast
over
the next couple
he's
of
amazing.
weeks. So you can look forward to that chat for sure. Any other questions? So how do you organize yourself from a food point of view? Do you do a weekly shop, or are you like me where you just go into the shop day in, day out?
You are the type of person that I cannot stand, because you just go into shop with your trolley and you just start throwing loads of stuff in and you go, yeah, spinach, I'm going to eat loads of spinach.
Tofu,
and then at the end of the week, you're throwing away loads of food because it's all gone soggy.
So, okay, you can't see right now, but she's pointing her finger at me and I'm just, sometimes, it depends on how much, okay, you got me, yeah, you got me.
So a big thing for me as well as food prep would be actually just minimizing my food waste. So a really big thing for me would be just making sure that on a Saturday, I screenshot loads of recipes I want to make. So, you know, your favorite food blog or your favorite cookbook, just screenshot recipes that you ideally think would be like, I'm going to enjoy this during the week. Do an online food shop is one of the best things you can do. And if you do it with, you know, whatever supermarket, you can pick loose veg, so you can have least packaging as you want, and you're not tempted by anything else in the shopping market, and what you order just arrives for you and you've kept to your shopping list. And then all I do on a Sunday is wash, chop and peel everything. I don't make anything. I just peel it and put it into different kind of bags or bowls in the fridge, and then it's ready to go.
I love the advice there of doing an online shop. that blew my mind. Obviously, I knew you could do it, but like in my head, I could kind of would wonder why I would do it. But from a point of view of coming back, that makes so much sense.
So much more sense. And as well, I think the effort and the time we take going doing a shop is huge.
Yeah.
You know, so it's taking that, you know, 2-3 hours out of your Saturday and giving it back to you.
Great. There you go. Any other questions? So what would be, yeah, an easy vegan option? You're running late and you want to eat something that's completely plant-based. What do you suggest?
Well, what I'm going to have when I go home tonight and I'll be starving is just chickpea and courgette curry. So two things, like, well, chickpeas, you don't need to cook them, but just stir them around something. Courgette's only going to take about 5-6 minutes to cook, and you're always safe with the curry. Like, as long as you have some of your basic ingredients in the press, like your curry paste, a tin of chopped tomatoes, some curry powder, a few veggies, throw it all together. It's just really easy and really simple. But my whole book is basically quick.
You're like, okay, we're going to give you a taster, but buy the book.
Yeah. But you know what? I think, I think it's one of those things. I created the book because I wanted to take away all those ideas that eating vegan was expensive, it took too long, and it was just salads. Like, I wanted to create a book that was really quick, really easy, using accessible ingredients, and it was like comforting food, you know what I mean? So I think it's just, for me, I have all my veggies washed, sliced and diced in the fridge. And, you know, there's certain vegetables, maybe like aubergines and stuff, that might take a little bit longer, but it's the quick veggies for those quick meals that you want to stick to.
Yeah, I think chickpeas are just like...
Chickpeas and just like peppers and courgette and stuff.
Chickpeas
are great. They're safe,
they
yeah.
really, really are. They're so handy as well. Like, and they're high in protein.
And this podcast is sponsored by chickpeas. Yeah.
Do you have any other questions?
I was going to ask about your training. So I know obviously you're a PT. Mm. Do you do your own programming? And like, what's it look like? Is it like a push-pull legs? You're training like a bodybuilder or...
Yeah, so what's your training split? Here we go.
So my program is split into... 2 upper days and 2 lower days. So I do a 4-day program, and it's very much the kind of, you know, those normal movements. Like, I have a squat day, I have a deadlift day, I have a bench day, and I have a pull-up day. So it's, yeah, push-pull kind of certain days. And I like to split it because I really like to walk out of the gym with one part of my body really sore.
Makes sense.
Yeah. And then on my other days, I just do my little bits of running. Yeah. And I do keep my training, like, I'm very, like, it is very much programmed. I like clock in my numbers weekly. And I love at the end of like a 3-month program, or, you know, 12 weeks, three months, whatever it is, seeing the progression. Because each week I might be like, oh, I'm not
as in
actually
you're tracking your
tracking
lifts.
My numbers. Yeah. Yeah. And it's such a difference, because I used to only ever go to the gym and track my weight on the scales.
Yeah.
And now I'm like, the only weight I'm focused on is how many kg I'm getting up in my program. And like, you know, week by week, I might think, oh, I'm not like pushing that heavy, I'm not getting anywhere. But then when I look at the start of my program to the end, I'm like, I gained like 10 kg or 20 kg on some lifts. And I'm like, that's incredible. And I think it's makes me want to go back and do it again. Mm-hmm. I think a huge thing about the gym and why people might stop or lose motivation is because they're not tracking. They're not seeing the progress.
Mm-hmm. And we had a hand up at the back, I think, for a question there.
Would you ever do like a supper club?
So would you ever consider doing a supper club?
I'm actually doing supper clubs in London. And that's because I guess...
So not too far for you to go.
Just a quick flight.
Tomorrow morning
over,
if you can make it.
But that's because I guess I want to start creating communities over there as well. Because I work over there quite a lot. And like, I feel like in Ireland I do hike life events and... as well, I've kind of created my communities. Like, I would love to do supper clubs here, but I always kind of think that, oh, sure, people see me enough here. Like, I do hike lives and do other events, you know. And yeah, I would definitely love to do supper clubs, because, you know, as I said, food is my favorite thing. But I also do get quite conscious that I'm like, oh, I think Irish people, like, I have been around 10 years, you know what I mean? They're kind of sick of me.
I think they do, though, you know. Oh. I think that's a very Irish mindset to have, because we're such a small country.
Mm.
Yeah. So now you do the supper clubs.
Yeah.
Well, Roz, it has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you so much for joining us on the podcast. A great way to kickstart the series. We hope you had fun.
Oh, I loved it. Yeah.
I've learned so much just from talking to you. And once again, if you do not follow Roz's personal Instagram, you need to do it, because it will make you feel 10 times better about yourself. So thank you so much.
And on my new TikTok.
You've been listening to the Wellfest podcast with me, Marty Guilfoyle, brought to you by KBC. Remember to get your tickets for Wellfest in association with KBC on the 9th and 10th of May in the Royal Hospital Kilmainham, Dublin, if you haven't done so already. See you next time.